That'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it? I'll just surprise Pastor Bart. Hey, you're up. So today we're going to be wrapping up our series called Big Questions. And the thought behind this series has been, what are some questions that people might ask that they're asking for the reason of they're saying, I'm not real sure if I am interested in becoming a Christian. And what would be some hang-ups that they might have regarding that? So our question today that we're going to be looking at actually was the one that you all voted on. We had three questions last week, and both congregations voted, and this is the one that that won that we'll be looking at today. And over the last 3 weeks, we began the series by looking at the question of, aren't all religions basically the same? That some people might have that as an opinion. They say, well, you know, why should I become a Christian? Aren't all religions the same? A couple of weeks ago, we looked at, would a loving God really send people to hell? Pastor Bart did a great job looking at that question. And last week, we looked at, why does a good God allow bad things to happen? And we'll wrap up the series here today. And the main thought behind this question that we're going to be looking at today, and by the way, let me just say, it was submitted a few different times. It was worded a little bit different, but the gist of the question was basically the same, which is really revolving around this thought of, does God really exist? Does he really exist? I mean, is he real? Or is he something that's just kind of been made up? So I was thinking this week about Bigfoot. I love Bigfoot. I think I have a picture of Bigfoot here. I hope this doesn't alarm anyone, but I took this outside of my window this morning at Holiday Lakes. Picture of Bigfoot. And there are some other creatures that we, you know, there's the Loch Ness Monster, right? There's Nessie. That's a really poor fake because I realized after I put the picture in, that's not even Scotland. That's like Wisconsin or something. I don't know. But there's Nessie. Some other ones, you know, the Yeti is another one. I have that fellow right there, and it's awesome. If you squeeze his tummy, he roars. That's the abominable, right? Is that from Rudolph? Rudolph the Red Nose, right? Yeah, okay, all right. And then there's Mexico's version of Bigfoot, which is El Chupacabra, which I did not put on there because every picture was absolutely frightening that I found, and I didn't want kids to run screaming from from here. But they're all mythical creatures that some people claim actually exist. People claim to have seen these creatures. There are whole societies dedicated to the belief that these creatures are real. And I will not confirm or deny having watched multiple episodes of Finding Bigfoot on television. Of course, there isn't any real proof that these creatures are real, right? I mean, we have some blurry photos and some video that some people claim are proof, but we've never actually captured one, right? They've never discovered the dead body of one of these things. And then what about aliens? There's another one. A lot of people claim to have seen them too, but we don't really have any proof at all about life from another planet. We have fantastic stories of people being visited by and maybe even abducted by aliens, but there's no real proof beyond the stories, unless it's in Area 51, right? Fantasy? Most of us would say so. But what about God? Where does God fit into this discussion of mythical creatures? Because people claim to have seen him too. People claim to know him and have experiences with him. But is there proof of God? He's never been interviewed on TV, right? He's never been interviewed on TV. And it's an interesting thought. If God would be interviewed on TV, would he choose Fox News or CNN, right? Which would give him the best platform? I don't know. You know, which one he might choose there. He's never been a guest on Jimmy Fallon's show. I can't put my arm around him, right, and introduce him to you. I can't put my arm around him and say, Don, God, Don. You know, I can't do that. I can't physically present him before us. And so some people claim that God is just a fantasy. He's like Bigfoot. He's like Nessie. He's like aliens. He's an emotional crutch that has been made up to explain the unpredictability that we experience in life. And for some of these folks, quoting Bible verses just doesn't cut it. For them, they see the Bible as a book like any other book. It was a book written by people talking about a possible made-up God. So our big question today, it's our big thought and it's our question of the day, is how can I believe in God when I don't believe in the Bible? And I get this question because I've actually had it come up in conversations that I've had with people. Attempting to share my faith, and maybe I'll quote a Bible verse, maybe it's even, you know, John 3:16, and they respond this way, yeah, I really don't believe the Bible. So how do you witness to people who think this way? And they're out there, folks. There's actually quite a few of them that they would say, this describes me. So let's be totally honest with each other today. We cannot prove beyond the shadow of a doubt to some folks that God is real. We just aren't going to be able to do that because our ability to produce him and have him standing right in front of us, we're not capable of that, right? So we need to be realistic about that some people aren't going to be convinced. We said in the first week of this series that all religion, whatever it might be, requires an element of faith. That you can't believe in God without faith. Now, this shouldn't surprise us because that's how God has established the way that we can interact with him and know him. It says in Hebrews 11, verse 6, and it is impossible to please God without faith. Why is that? Well, the writer continues, anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists, and he rewards those who sincerely seek him. So for God, faith is essential to us relating to him. And faith essentially believes in something that cannot be proven through direct visual evidence. You know, Jesus said to Thomas after he appeared to him following his resurrection, you believe because you've seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me. And every religion and every major discipline requires some element of faith. Even science requires an element of faith. Now, some scientists don't want to hear that, and they would object to that statement, but it's true. Scientists have faith that their data is correct. They also have faith in the laws of science. Now they might tell you that faith and fact are different, but let me give you one example here. Take the law of cause and effect. Science embraces that in almost every discipline, and that every event must have a cause. Is that statement fact, or is it faith? It's both. It's both because no one can know that for certain. Every event must have a cause? Can we actually factually research every event in the universe? No. Right? Because there are hundreds of bajillions of those. We can't do that to determine if it has a cause. There's an element of faith here. Since I know about a million events that actually had a cause behind them, I make the reasonable assumption that all events have a cause. That's demonstrating faith. But let's say that you are selected to be on a jury in our legal system. You're placed to serve in a serious case, it's an assault case, where a young man is being accused of assaulting and robbing an elderly woman. And the prosecuting attorney is going to ask you to convict this man based upon the evidence presented, right? And the judge will ask you and the other jurors to bring back a verdict of guilty if you find the defendant guilty beyond a what? Reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt. And so when we start thinking about this, does God exist? And how do we witness to people that maybe say, I don't believe in the Bible? This suddenly becomes really interesting. Is it possible to gather enough evidence from the world around us and even from life itself to discover beyond a reasonable doubt that God exists? I think so. I really think so. I think for people who are truly seeking to find the truth, there's enough evidence. Let me take a time out here and just say that there's been this perception over the last 40 years or so that science is the enemy of God, and that science doesn't like Christianity, and Christianity doesn't like science, and they seem like they're always at war with each other. But can I tell you that today science is becoming more of a key evidentiary voice pointing to the reality that someone or something must have been behind the formation of life in our universe. Discoveries in cell composition, DNA, the human genome, and the constants in our universe are offering compelling evidence that there must have been a designer behind our universe. There must have been. And today, we don't have time to dig into all the new stuff that's just come up, even in the last 5 or 6 years, folks. But as I was kind of digging into looking at this, I was going, wow, this is some compelling stuff. And so sometime within the next year, we're going to do a series on, can Christianity and science coexist? And folks, I'm telling you, they can. And science is more and more and more pointing to the reality that God exists. So we don't have enough time today to dig into all that, but we're going to take a small snapshot of some of this stuff this morning. So is it possible to convince someone that God is real, even if they don't believe the Bible? And if so, how would you go about doing that? I want to begin here this morning by looking at 4 major thoughts of faith so that we can build a platform to answer this question. I'm going to hit these really quickly, but I think it's really important that we grab these 4 major philosophies of faith. The first one is this: it's materialism or naturalism. Naturalism says that matter is the prime reality of the universe. Okay? God is not the prime reality of the universe. Matter is. From eternity, there were particles that existed. And these particles eventually became living organisms that led to becoming more complicated living organisms that eventually became self-aware living organisms. And these now self-aware creatures conceived of the concept of an almighty, all-powerful God. And this process occurred over hundreds of billions of years. That's naturalism. The next one is theism. That's what we believe as the Christian Alliance Church, that a personal God is the prime reality of the universe. That a God not only created the universe, but he's involved. He's personal. He's directing events according to his will and his purpose. The next one is deism. And deism says that a personal but remote God is the prime reality of the universe. In other words, God created the universe, but then after he did it, he just took his hands off it and he stepped back. And he's letting the world run, and he's not really involved, and he's not really controlling events. He's just kind of an impassive observer. That's deism. And then the third one is pantheism. And pantheism says an impersonal God is the prime reality of the universe. Think Star Wars and the Force here. That's pantheism. And I wanted to share those with you for a couple of reasons. And the first one is this: most of philosophical, religious, and science explanation fall somewhere within these 4 areas. Like 99% of reason and thought philosophies fall within this area. It hits one of these 4 thoughts. And then here's another one. Logically, let's take a step back, because we're talking to folks that say, I don't really believe the Bible's true, so don't use that as proof of God's existence. So let's take a step back and let's look at this logically. One of these 4 things has to be true, right? I mean, either there is no God whatsoever and the universe just spontaneously happened, either there's a God who's personal and direct and involved, or there's a God who's not directly involved, who created, or there's just this, you know, there's this just force, this mystical, we don't really know what it is, but it's controlling events. One of these has to be true. And so the first step to lead people to is to say, we have to get to the place where we have to acknowledge one of these is true. And can we determine from what we experience around us, can we get to the place where we can say this one requires the least amount of faith? Can we get there? So today I'd like to kind of present a case like a prosecuting attorney by just offering some clues about the world around us to convince someone beyond a reasonable doubt that a personal God is behind our world. Here's clue number 1. It's called the cosmological clue. Oh, that's a big word, but cosmos just literally means universe. So when we look at the cosmological clue, we're looking at the design of the universe. Does the design of the universe point toward random chance, or does it point toward some catalyst or creator? We know what David said in Psalm 19. It's kind of going to be our key verse of the day. I kind of want this verse rattling around your head as we talk for the next few minutes. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display His craftsmanship. I know you've all heard of the Big Bang Theory, that the universe just exploded into existence, that at some point in time, a catastrophic event catapulted the universe into what it is today. It was a very popular belief for over 100 years, that the universe just spontaneously leapt into existence. Seemed pretty far-fetched, you know, well, just spontaneous? Like, what caused that, you know? And there were a lot of unanswered questions. But that was the popular belief that was held. And then about 50 years ago, scientists began to discount the Big Bang as a viable explanation for how the universe began. A new way of thinking involved, and there were specific reasons why they had to do that. And it's called the eternal theory. And the main thought behind this theory is that the universe has existed forever. And then at some point in time, the conditions became right to formulate life. And this theory is now what most atheist scientists believe. However, there is a huge problem with that theory. It's huge. Interestingly enough, for several decades, Christians resisted the thought of the Big Bang Theory. I mean, they fought against it viciously. They thought it was a theory designed to undermine how the Bible taught that our world began, and maybe it was. But then in 1932, a man by the name of Edwin Powell Hubble, you've probably heard of him, made a startling discovery. Hubble, he used to be an attorney, but later in life became so fascinated with astronomy that he switched careers. He developed this new telescope. It was over 100 inches long, so it was over 8 feet long. And with that telescope, he was able to see things out into our galaxy and beyond that people had never been able to see in the history of humanity. And with this telescope, he was able to zero in on these faint blobs of light that were so distant from us that had long been suspected and believed to have been distant stars. And he discovered something startling. They weren't stars. They were galaxies. And folks, there were thousands of them. Thousands of these galaxies that had never been able to be seen before, each containing billions of stars. And Hubble also discovered something else that today is called the Doppler effect. It's a version of what you see on weather reports when they have the Doppler radar on. It's also known as red shift. And red shift is the color of light that's shown when an object is moving away from our point of view at a high rate of speed. Now, I know I got all scientific on you here. Stay with me, though. You know what Hubble discovered? These thousands of galaxies were all in the high-end red shift, every single one of them. Do you know what the significance of that was? He discovered, first of all, that our universe was expanding. And he discovered that it basically was expanding away from us. Now, we can only observe about 20% of our universe based upon where our planet is located and how it's situated in the Milky Way, okay? But from what he could observe, those galaxies were retreating from us at a high rate of speed. It was a startling discovery. It rethought scientific thought about how the universe must have began. Now it was called into question. How could the universe have be eternal? It was such a powerful discovery that Albert Einstein visited Hubble's telescope to see it for himself. Because Einstein was one of the leading scientists who had proposed the infinite or eternal theory. And when he saw the red shift for himself, he uttered this now famous quote, "I now see the need for a beginning." There are a couple things that we really need to grab from this. It's your next blanks. This evidence supports the belief that our universe had a beginning. It isn't infinite. It hasn't existed forever. It is an event that happened. So if there was a Big Bang, from this evidence, it seems to have occurred somewhere very close to Earth, especially when you consider light year measurements. And then third, if the Big Bang was the beginning of our universe, we have to ask the question, then what was the catalyst that launched it? What was the cause? Could it be that the cause that launched the universe's existence was let there be light? Psalm 33 says, "The Lord merely spoke and the heavens were created. He breathed the word and all the stars were born. For when he spoke, the world began. It appeared at his command." See, the Big Bang theory is actually very compatible to what we believe about creation, that God spoke the universe into existence. Try to get deductive here with me. If the Bible is true, then we should in fact find evidence in our world and in science that the universe isn't eternal, that it's finite. It had a beginning. And scientific evidence is overwhelming for that fact. Can I tell you that? I just hit you with one. That's all we had time for today. And the Big Bang is not how the universe began. It's simply the first effect of the universe. So what was the cause? You know, today more and more scientists are forced to believe that the universe did in fact have a beginning. And for atheists, it's a major problem for them because they have no idea what caused it to begin. But now we can see scientifically, beyond the Bible, the first effect, right? Boom. So much more evidence for the universe having a beginning. Things like gravitational forces, radiation, gaseous developments. We don't have time to explore all those today. If you want to explore them a little bit more, I encourage you to check out Stephen Meyer's website. It's stephencmeyer.org. Did I put that in your notes? Check that website out. He runs an institute called the Discovery Institute. He's one of the world's leading geneticists. And he has all this compelling scientific evidence that says God has to exist. He actually has a 13-week video study, and it's called Does God Exist? I got a picture of it here, and I'm throwing that up there because this is amazing to me. You can actually watch this free on Amazon Prime right now. There are 13 sessions. It's also on YouTube. Stephen Meyer, Does God Exist? If you have a teenager, you should watch this series with them. Because he just walks through the scientific world and what it says about the fact that there must not be a God. And he refutes that by saying, I think the scientific world is saying the opposite. And can I tell you that our kids are getting a different lesson than what we teach here in our schools? Commercial over, there it is, but I encourage you to think about it. Here's our case argument using philosophy 101 techniques. Everything that begins to exist must have a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe must have a cause that transcends itself. Is that some random effect when the conditions were just right? Or could it be that someone or something was the cause? Which is more scientific? Isaiah tells us, "Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing." You know, so I think it's far more reasonable to assume that the universe began the result of a direct action instead of random chance. Paul uses his Roman educated mind to reason this way. He says, "They know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God." So the cosmological clue, it takes notice of the world around us and it states there must be an intelligence behind what we experience. What is that intelligence? Is it possible that that intelligence is the God of the Bible? Is it possible? Here's clue number two. It's the teleological clue. And teleological means design. And it says basically this: the highly ordered design of our universe and within life, even in its simplest form, refutes random chance and points to some intelligence causing that design. Let me see if I can illustrate it to you this way. There are 40 numbers on the dial of this combination, right? We understand how standard combination lock works. There are 40 numbers on this dial, and there are three settings to the combination lock, right? So to be able to open this lock through random chance, the mathematical number would be 40 times 40 times 40, that I could just guess at what this combination is and actually be able to open it, right? That's 1 in 64,000s of a chance. Let's try it. I have some friends. Where are my friends? Come up here, my friends, who are going to help me try to randomly open this lock. Cheer them on. Some of them are like, I guess I'll do it. All right, you want to go first? Give me your name, buddy. This is Eli. Eli, how lucky are you as a person? Not sure. Okay, see if you can open that lock for me. I'm going to give you one shot at it. 1 in 64,000. He's thinking deeply. What are your favorite numbers? Are you doing your combination from school? No, it won't open? You're not very lucky, man. Sir. And you are, sir? Yes. Your name, sir?
Jim Scott.
This is Jim Scott, okay. Now, Jim has a, you have a scientific background. NASA, rocket science-y. See if he's lucky, though. Jim's 1 in 64,000 is right. Thanks for checking my math, because you never know. All right. And you are?
Hannah.
This is Hannah. I needed luckier people. We need 64,000 people. Wait, what do you know? What's your favorite number? Eight? That's my favorite number, too. Do you have a favorite number? What the world? Hannah just opened the lock. Who in here believes that she got that through random chance just now? I see one hand. I see two. Why aren't the rest of you raising your hands? What? Is this your lock? No? So what are you assuming, though? She knew the combination, right? Thank you, guys. You guys can grab a seat. She knew that. She had to know the combination, right? Because 1 in 64,000, are you kidding me? That's not, as soon as somebody opens this lock, after what I just said, your immediate thought is, it's a setup, right? You're going, it's a setup. It's been planned. She has to know the combination because the odds of that are just unbelievable. How could somebody actually do that? Here's what your rational mind tells you. When something improbable happens compared to an independently known pattern, we automatically recognize design. Did I do a flyby on you there? Think of it this way. When something improbable happens, like the lock being randomly open, and we compare that to what we know about the lock, that it's a three-stage combination, and there's a 1 in 64,000 chance that someone hit it by random thought, by random chance, immediately we rationalize and we deduce that it wasn't a random event. It was a setup. She had to know the combination. Here's your next blank. Human beings are hardwired to recognize design. What does that mean? It means when it comes to our universe, rationally, we have to deduce that there must be a setup somewhere. There must be. There must be someone designing this. It's way too unlikely that it was random chance. Use your imagination with me. Let's say that we could get on the Starship Enterprise with Jean-Luc Picard. Oh, if it could only be true. And we could actually travel out into our galaxy, okay? And we could actually travel to the place where the control room of the universe exists. Now, there is no control room, okay? We're using our imaginations here, okay? And we get to this control room in the universe where all the dials are set so that our universe could exist. And there would be this giant room, and it has about 35 dials on them. Dials like dials on a lock. And all 35 of those dials would have to be set at just the right exact spot for life to exist in our universe. Just for life to exist, not for it to spontaneously create itself. Things like gravitational force, radiation levels. There are about 35 of them, and they would have to be exact. Remember that number? 40 times 40 times 40 equals 64,000. Do you know what this one is? This one is 40 times 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 40. I gotta go 35. That number is astronomical. I got a 1 minute video here to try to illustrate it. Watch this.
The strength of gravity is just one of at least 30 separate parameters that must be finely tuned to produce a life-sustaining universe. Another example is the cosmological constant.
The cosmological constant describes the expansion speed of space in the universe. If space expands too quickly, then the universe will spread out so quickly that material objects can't form. So you can't get stars and galaxies and planets and the types of things that we, of course, take for granted in our universe.
Physicists have determined that the cosmological constant is fine-tuned to one part in 100 million billion 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 billion. Such precision has been compared to traveling hundreds of miles into space, then throwing a dart at the Earth, and hitting a bullseye measuring 1/1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
Nailed it, though, right? Isn't that amazing? And that's just one of those dials being randomly set. There are 35 of them. All of that random chance just to make life possible. Listen to what God says about our universe. It directly relates to this. It's found in Isaiah 45. It says, "For the Lord is God, and He created the heavens and earth and put everything in place. He made the world to be lived in, not to be a place of empty chaos. I am the Lord," He says, "and there is no other." Do you know what the universe would be if just one of those dials wasn't set to the right place? It would be empty chaos. But God is saying, no, I've designed things specifically and intentionally. God, the designer, is behind the universe, and He set those dials Himself. Listen to what He tells Job. "Were you there when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determines dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations?" God's talking about gravitational constants here, folks. That's what He's talking about. "And who laid its cornerstone as the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy?" See, the theological clue states that there's too much order and design in the universe for it to be random chance. Someone must have programmed it. Could that someone have been the God of the Bible? I gotta speed up here. Let me give you a couple more clues real quick as we wrap up. Clue number three is the morality clue, also known as the anthropological clue. It states this: if objective morality exists, then a moral God must exist too. In other words, it's saying, how would it be possible in the evolutionary process of human beings for us to have learned the difference between right and wrong unless there was a God that was teaching, demonstrating, and implanting that truth within us? There are things that people inherently know is wrong: murder, lying, cheating. We instinctively know those things are wrong. Now, some people choose to do them anyway, but we know that they're wrong. Why would morality exist without a higher power influencing that thought? Paul tells us in Romans 2, even Gentiles who do not have God's written word show that they know his law when they instinctively obey it, even without having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written in their hearts, for their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them what they are doing is right. You know, the moral clue states inherent understanding for right and wrong must come from a higher power and a higher morality. Is the God of the Bible behind right and wrong? Could he be? Then here's the last one, clue number 4, the Christ clue. It's also known as the Christological clue, and it states that the well-documented of life of Jesus and his ability to fulfill hundreds of prophecies far exceeds any random chance. You know, about Jesus' resurrection, Paul records in 1 Corinthians 15, after that he was seen by more than 500 of his followers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have died. Jesus' existence isn't a historical fact, and it's well documented. And since he did exist and his life has been well recorded, what would make him live and die like he did unless he was truly who he said he was? What would make that happen? C.S. Lewis wrote, either Jesus' claim to be God was delusional, deceitful, or truthful, but his life and character and death rule out the first two possibilities. You know, if you want to explore this clue in more detail, can I tell you, I so highly recommend Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ. Lee is a guy that was an investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And one day, one of his friends sat down and tried to share his faith in Jesus with Lee. And Lee stopped him. He said, I don't want to hear that garbage. He goes, I do not believe in God. I don't even want to hear it. And his friend is like, well, why don't you believe in God? And Lee was like, well, I had this bad experience at church, and I had somebody treat me this way, and he had all these like real just like loose thoughts behind it. And his friend said, Lee, I can't believe that you're one of the country's leading investigative reporters, and you've never investigated the validity of Jesus' claims? I find that astounding. And Lee went home and thought about it. He said, you know what? He's right. I'm going to do that. I'm going to investigate the claims of Jesus. It led him to inviting Jesus to become his Lord and Savior. And he's written several books. And this, The Case for Christ, is a story about how that happened in his life. I got two. I'll give them away. Somebody got a birthday today? Anybody got a birthday today? Who's got a birthday close to today? Anybody got a birthday close? This week? No birthdays this week? Last week? Oh, I got Bob. Oh, right here, Cindy. You saw the movie too? If I was in youth group, I would chuck this, but I'm so not, so I'm not going to do that. I would probably hit you guys, and that would be terrible. You've read them all. That's excellent. All right. Congratulations, you guys. I have one more copy in my office, and I will see that it gets in our church library if somebody wants to check it out. But it's really a great read. Here's the bottom line. You know, even without the Bible, there is compelling evidence that indicates beyond a reasonable doubt of the existence of a creator behind creation. Could not that creator be the God of the Bible? Is that possible? And when we engage folks in a discussion about our faith and they don't find the Bible as compelling evidence, these clues are additional evidence that we can use to hopefully convince them beyond a reasonable doubt that God must exist. And if he exists, then we can begin the conversation. Okay, God exists. So could the God who exists, could he be? Could he be the God of the Bible? May God give us many, many opportunities to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Invite the worship team to come up here, and I'm gonna pray here. Can we pray together? Lord, I thank you so much for your word. I'm so grateful, Father, that in your word we can discover everything that we need to know about who you are, about who we are, and about how we can have a restored relationship with you. You haven't left any secrets there. You've laid out the plan so clearly. Father, give us a heart. Give us a heart to have others understand this message as well, I pray. Because we understand, I mean, Pastor Bart looked at this 2 weeks ago, that this is life and death stuff here. So would you give us opportunities to tell the message of Jesus? And would you empower us with what we need to be as creative as we might need to be, to help people understand who you are and the plans that you have for them? And they are wonderful plans. So I'm praying for all of us, for myself, Lord, that you would help us to be light in a dark world, that you would help us to be salt in a world that desperately needs God flavor, and that you would give us opportunities to expand your kingdom. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.